Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world. And now your hosts, Yog and Manish.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the ABM Conversations podcast. Today is an interesting day. We have a very special guest joining us from Singapore. That's James Spurway. James is an advisor, investor, and a mentor who has led or invested in a portfolio of 9 companies since 1994. And he has also mentored a number of companies during that time. This is me, Yag.
And this is me, Manish. Thank you so much for joining us today, James. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Love to be here.
This is our very first time inviting someone on the show. So we are pretty excited about having a guest on our podcast.
Yeah, Lucan, it's Chinese New Year here in Singapore. So the first day of a brand new year. So, hey, good luck.
That's a good day. Yeah, thank you.
Good omen.
happy year of the rat, I believe it is.
Yeah, and guess who's a rat? Moi, me.
Right. So, James, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience, you know, the kind of things that you've done, your experience, and where you are today?
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot. Look, I'm a bit of an older dude, right? I'm a generation or two above you. But look, I feel young because I get involved every day with startups, with young teams, with great ambitions, big visions. They want to change the world. Isn't that exciting? And I get to be there. I get to actually help them, I'd say, take that enthusiasm and kind of like sometimes mold it, direct it, channel it, you know, in the right place to make them realize that sometimes it's about maximizing your potential. It's not about just going like, let's do it. Yeah, energy's fine, enthusiasm's fine, but sometimes you need someone to say, been there, done that, might not work. You might think about doing this and look at me sometimes and go, oh, okay, we'll give it a try. So that's kind of like where I'm at. Startups particularly. I love spending time with startups.
That's great. We've noticed that your online bio says that you are a fractional CMO. Can you elaborate what kind of role that is and if you are associated with any brands right now in the capacity of being a fractional CMO?
Right. So it's no different to a CMO, meaning the functions of a CMO are pretty well standard and fixed. I mean, they're flexible depending on the size of the business. Fractional just means that I get to spend time with a series of clients. So non-competing companies. So in other words, I would never work for two banks or two companies in, say, the SAAS space. It's always going to be non-competing. But what it means is that they get me for maybe a day, a week, or it's up to how much they need me. But I spend time with the CEO and their sales team. So we're kind of like, I'm like an outside advisor, but yet I can be treated like a part of the team. I can roll up my sleeves and do stuff if that's what they want from me. But I try and help them get the best out of me by trying to make sure that I fill the gaps, right? I don't want to double up on someone. I don't want to do the same as someone else is doing. I want to give them insights from an outside perspective to allow them to make better decisions. And that's what I do most of the time. So, yeah, I've got 4 or 5 remits or mandates right now. They're mainly in the, actually three of the five are B2B, but they're in the fintech sector. There's 2 that are fairly traditional. One's manufacturing, high-tech computer, and the other one is actually a startup that's going to try and revolutionize the transportation sector. So, yeah, but none of them are yet well-known. They will be. At least some of them are going to be. I'm hoping one of them is going to be unicorn one day, but yeah. That's what I'm doing at the present time is fractional CMO.
That sounds pretty interesting and, you know, a little different as well from the traditional perspective. But that said, you know, are there any specific business stages that would need a fractional CMO to come in? Or what is the right time for the fractional CMO to actually step into this kind of a company?
Yeah, no, good question. Look, I would say there's 4. I'll carve out 4 scenarios that warrant thinking about a fractional CMO or where it makes sense. So if your company's got an existing marketing team, 2 or 3 people, maybe a few more if you're lucky, and you need executive leadership and guidance, but the CEO either doesn't have time and probably shouldn't be spending time, or doesn't come from a marketing background, that's a good way, that's a good example or use case to get a fractional CMO rather than spending the money and have the headcount and the burn rate of a full-time CMO, because you might not yet be ready for a full-time CMO. The second scenario I'd say was like an early stage startup where you need to have an executive, an aggressive go-getter who understands go-to-market, who's done that before, and you need to show revenue traction and early growth, probably because you've got a VC lined up with money to give you, but they want to see certain milestones, so you need to get this thing ramped up quickly, and you just don't have the hands-on capability to do that. Third scenario might be, let's call it a stopgap. So your company's in the market, it's doing business, got revenue, and it needs a CMO. You say, I think in 6 months' time, I'd love to have a CMO, but I need to spend time looking for the right cultural fit, the right fit, but I want to have someone right now, like a day or two a week. Again, a good chance for a fractional CMO to come on board. And I guess the last scenario I can think of is it's like a company that needs an experienced marketing leader to define the key marketing roles and kind of like build that in-house team. So maybe the CEO, again, doesn't come from that side. Probably the CEO could be like a really great a person on the tech side, engineering side, but doesn't kind of feel good on finance or marketing. Traditionally, that's a common problem that I face. But they know that if they get someone in to help them, just give them the kind of like the brief that they'll then feel more comfortable going and getting that CMO. So a lot of times it's more like support. It's giving people the extra bit of comfort to know that this person from the outside is not going to try and take over or screw them. This person from the outside, my brief is to make their decision making better and easier, if you like. So yeah, therefore, four different scenarios, I'd say, that a fractional CMO works.
That's really awesome. That's very interesting to know. And since we are on the topic of hand-holding startups from a point of fractional CMO, right? Let's get into the weeds of what is common between us, that is marketing, right? Do you think there is a difference in approach between a go-to-market strategy for a startup, say if they have just released an MVP versus an established company about to launch a new product or a service?
Another very good question. The answer is yes, there is a different approach. And I've seen enough of both to know that, you've got to understand, you can guess the answer, but there is no one approach that's going to work. And that frustrates the hell out of those CEOs who want to think that this is like, just get a book, get a guide, get something and just follow it, right? Hey, it must work. It's not as simple as that. Nothing is as simple as that. And, marketing is, if nothing else, it's a challenge. Every day is something new, right? Every day it's a test, check, calibrate, recalibrate, and redo situation. You can never just set and forget. If I can come back and just pre-phrase this by saying, if you think about some of the challenges all B2B businesses face, I think that helps you define a little bit about the answer to strategy and go to market. So some of the common difficulties the people I've helped, the B2B startups I've seen and helped have, are that at that point where you're just getting going, you've done your MVP, the next phase would be a B2B company may need to participate in, say, the bidding process, right, arranged by the purchaser where they've got the product, it's a fit, it's the right spec. So the purchaser could get proposals from multiple B2B companies and then evaluate them and see which one they think is going to work. Well, that's fine. That's part of the way it works. But that means that the purchase decision can be pending for long periods of time. I mean, some large vendors have a 3-month, even longer, gestation period. Could even be 6 months, although 3 months, 4 months is not uncommon. So, your approach to go to market is kind of like hanging in the balance depending on someone else to come back to you. But let's face it, B2B is still better than B2C. So, okay, hang in there type of thing. And in that sort of same vein, the purchasing committee is usually a bunch of people, not one person. So it's made up of different people from different departments, meaning different backgrounds, different windows on the world, different experiences. And, you know, your B2B startup approach then has to be, or how do I reach each of those and educate and convince them that this is the best offering that they can look at? So, you know, that's much different to a little bit different to an ongoing go-to-market. But I think the last situation would be that you have to think about the problems they face is, you know, the dollar value of the company's offerings in a wholesale manner would be high, but the company's probably requested to do things like extra prototypes or, you know, slight variations, customization. So, again, that's going to impact the way you approach your go-to-market. If you know all those things are like variable inputs on one side and then your output is what's my go-to-market strategy. So, okay, I think this is going to be a bit of a longer answer, but I think one of the things I must say right here on that is that I still find that the traditional concept of product market fit is wrong. I mean, flat out, 100% black and white, wrong. It's got to be seen as being a market product fit. That's the only sustainable approach. And I think one of the problems I have is telling people that. You know, they say, well, product market fit, we'll get the product, we'll find the right market. No. You know, look at the market. What's the problem they're having? What's the niche that you can get into? And then can you build a solution that's competitive to solve that problem? That's my approach to life. Yeah. So, look, my B2B marketing strategies, go-to-market strategies, are something similar to what I'd suggest even to a B2C if it's a startup. That's the caveat, right? It's a startup. So, in other words, use your existing connections. You know, get into creating very good content, blogs, blog posts, this sort of thing, podcasts, channels. I'd also be doing some email mail ads because email is still by far the best ROI, value for money approach to reaching those people and engaging those people that you can have in terms of all your channels. I tell my people to study their competitors. I really, they like, for me, they have to spend a lot of time getting their head around the competition and understanding it, not just ignoring it, but, you know, saying what's good about your competitors, not just, they're all crap and, you know, we're better and that's fine. You've got to get deep and meaningful and understand what they're doing good, because you have to turn that round into a plus for you when you're actually approaching your ideal client. And I guess, you know yourself, networking at every chance and setting up local things like local incubators, right? Getting up and getting involved in local incubators, getting the word out there. And I guess lastly, building your online presence. Everyone sort of seems to overlook the fact that people still look at a website, or they look at you know, referrals, or they look at people who like you or whatever. They use that as being useful. You know, people who want to use your product, they think that's okay. I mean, we may think that's just a joke. Anyone can have a nice website and anyone can, you know, print what you like and do what you like. But if the people that are deciding want to see that, then you can't ignore it. But a lot of B2B startups want to just forget that and just go straight into, let's talk to people, let's show them, let's demonstrate. Well, yeah, but let's get a presence as well. So I guess there's seven parts that I'd normally say belongs to a startup strategy for B2B, but that's a lot different to my mind to an established company. And there I use the matrix approach. I don't know whether you've heard of that, the matrix concept of getting a go-to-market strategy set up. Is that something new or something that you kind of like have heard before? Mission matrix?
No.
Sounds pretty new to us. Yeah. You mentioned some really interesting and new perspective to us, and I think it's very exciting to for us to hear that.
And in fact, from what you said, you know, moving from a product market approach to a market product fit, one of the key things, you know, I also would love to hear your perspective on is how does that have an impact when it comes to validating a product? Right. So, for example, it makes a lot of sense to build a product for an identified need or a pain point and solve that. But, you know, most of the cases, what happens is people try to build an MVP and try to validate that, taking out to the market. Now, when we go the reverse, you still have to go ahead and validate and see if people see the product the same way you do. So how does that change with this model?
We would tend to start off with small focus groups, getting people to champion our cause. So I always try and identify a customer who's a likely customer who maybe I have a connection to or someone has a senior connection to right away. I mean, you kind of like do a bit of brainstorming, you have some sessions, you say, look, chances are we can do something for that particular vertical, that particular company, that particular sector. Do we know someone there? Can we get in right now and just have that open and frank conversation? Guys, we're thinking of trying to solve this problem. We know it's an issue. We've heard it's an issue. Can we get you on board right now as like a quasi-advisor, meaning it's not going to be official. Yes, you don't have to play a different role or be an inside spy, but we just want to fire lots of ideas at you and lots of information at you and get you sort of to a point where we're going to give you something and say, is that basically what we're talking about in a very rough sense? And if it is, we're going to come back in 3 months' time or 2 months' time or whatever it might be with that in a pretty, pretty format as our MVP. So I think the only thing I would do is we take that testing right at the start and kind of like have a extended testing, extended, if you like, focus group sessions sort of before we get down to tin tacks about spitballing how we're going to create that. We do really kind of like wireframe, very basic outlining of that product and talk about it more than actually make something that practically works. And so, that's what you say to the customer. So if we had this and this did this and this looked like that and that worked that way, you're saying that would be something you'd like. Yeah? Oh, okay, great. So we understand that. Now we'll come back with a technical specification and you'll get actually something you can test and touch and use in, whatever it might be, 35, 45, 50 days, 60 days. And then the guys go, yeah, look, these guys love me. I mean, they think I'm, fantastic. They want to actually have me involved in this product development, meaning I'm almost like a co-developer of this product. So, you get buy-in. Okay, it's one customer. Maybe that's not enough. But I'm basing my belief that generally, apart from, small changes and everything else, one industry has similar problems. And all the companies in that industry are facing something similar, maybe variations of it. But if one company loves it, you can pretty well be sure that other companies are going to love it.
Lovely. That's amazing. I've never heard that perspective before. And I think me and Yag have to kind of do some more research on understanding this better. Maybe it makes up for round two, interview with you. But having said that, can we rewind the discussion a little bit? And, I remember you mentioned something about the matrix model. Yeah. Can you elaborate that a little bit?
Yeah. So, exactly. So, and I'm not the creator of this. I mean, I've done a lot of research, a lot of study, a lot of extra homework over the years. One thing you can't do is sit there and if you're in this profession, if you're trying to advise companies, you have to stay on top of everything that's breaking, everything that's new, everything that's coming out. And, like anything, take all of the 10 things that came out this month and some of them don't work, some of them do. But you have to know the good ones, the ones that are useful tools, and adopt it. So this was brought out, I guess, a year or so, maybe 18 months ago, and I started using it pretty well straight away because it's just logical. So conceptually, imagine go along the top of a page, go along the left-hand side of the page, so two margins. On the top, you'd have a target company. So you have three different subsets: SMB, small medium business, mid market, and ENT, right, enterprise. On the left hand side, the left hand columns also divided up into three, and that'd be sales strategy. So that's made up of no/low, which is low touch, right? No or low touch, self service basically. The second is medium, so medium touch, inside sales, partnerships, etc. And the third is high touch, enterprise sales. So now you've got a 9-box grid to the right of that, right? In that space below and beside, there's 9 boxes. And this is no different to anything else. You're trying to figure out what is the low-hanging fruit. Where should I, let's say, as a startup versus an established company, be pitching? Where should I be? Trying to position myself, who else is in the market, where are they positioned? And if you're an existing company coming out with a new product, the question would be, if you're already doing like, let's say, if you're already down in that section, which is, no to low touch, and also you're selling to SMBs, it'd be hard to come out with a product and position yourself all of a sudden at the high touch enterprise level, right? It's just a massive, like, jump from where you were to where you want to be. So this helps people I suppose, filter out the BS or get rid of the ego. You know, it's like, well, guys, you might want to be up there, but that's where, you know, the big guys are, right? That's where all of the enterprise software guys are. Do you think you can solve it better than they do? Or are you better off coming up with sort of like, instead of going from no or low touch in SMB, go to no and low touch for mid-market, right? Just extend along the index a bit that way. Or stay in SMB, but go to more of a, okay, extra service situation, right? Medium touch, add in extra value. You see what I'm saying? So instead of like leapfrogging and going from one low, like low to high, or from even worse, from high back to low, that doesn't work. You've got to figure out where you are, and you've got to be realistic about perception, branding, all those things before you decide to go off into the wilderness and create this ubiquitous wonderful product that's going to fix. I mean, that's, anyone can create a product to fix a problem, but are you the right person or are you the right company to fix that particular problem? That's my job all the time, to kind of like I said, channel, you know, bring their, sometimes, you know, lower their expectations, get their ego under control, and tell it in a way that they can understand that this is going to be great for the company, massive for the company, versus, well, I'm going to feel great because I've done this fantastic thing, right? It's about survival, isn't it? It's about making money, sadly, and that means being realistic.
Right, and it almost sounds like, you know, how they ask on Shark Tank, are you the guy to do this? You know, that sounds like that.
Yeah. In a way, that's part of my role. Part of my role is to act in a way as like the unofficial outside sounding board and judge and sort of, in a way, they're giving me a lot of responsibility, because if I'm wrong, then it's way off. But I'm not using my gut on this. I'm using tried and true methodology. I always fall back here in this particular case. I'm always falling back to data and to methodology, not just I think. I think doesn't work.
So true.
And I think your wide-ranging experience as an investor and a mentor also kind of helps you do that and, you know, look at things from a broader perspective, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Right. So, you know, let's, I think we have covered a lot of things in the last 20 minutes or so. I think let's wrap this up. Let's probably, you know, have another conversation, maybe part two of this, as Manish suggested. But for now, can you share with our audience as where they can find you and, you know, where they can connect with you and what are the kind of things that people can connect with you for?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm on LinkedIn, of course, in a personal capacity. The company's also got LinkedIn and Instagram and Facebook, you know, the usual kind of pages. But I mean, I think the best place to find me is on LinkedIn in a personal capacity, and I can give you that, or if you don't have that, I can send that to you. I love to spend time on LinkedIn to see what is going on, to what other people are doing. I like to spend time engaged in conversations, right? Engaged in deep and meaningful conversations about things that are affecting us all, not just in a business sense, but in a personal sense. So I probably spend, you know, half an hour to an hour every day on LinkedIn. But no, look, usual social media pages I can send, or if they want to somehow get hold of me. And of course, the company's called Digital Marketing Offers, oneword.com. So yeah, they're always welcome to come online there and send me some request information, or you know, tag me, or get my WhatsApp number, which is listed there, and just send me a message. I'm an easily accessible guy, and I'm not the sort of person who has a whole bunch of assistants or EAMs or whatever you want to call it. I mean, the last time I had a secretary, guys, paid secretary, sitting in the same office helping me was 1993. Go figure.
Wow.
Nice. So what if, you know, if you would have one sentence as a parting message towards the end of the conversation for all startup founders to keep in mind, what would that be?
It's not about you. Sorry to say. It's not.
That's fantastic. I think that's very difficult,
very deep, yeah.
Deep and profound, and that's not very easy to, you know, practice as well.
Yeah, it isn't, but sadly, that's where most things go wrong very early. It's because they get deeply wound up in the fact that they really do believe, which is great. You got to have self-belief that they are, like you said, the one, and they're going to do this. Well, it's not about you. That's all I can say.
Well, we are running up on time, so we don't want to hold you for any longer time. Thank you so much for coming to our show, James. It's been a really good pleasure having you on the show. And we'll stay in touch. We'll put your LinkedIn profile in the show notes. We'll link it to that. And have a good day.
Yeah, look, great to be there. And what you guys are doing, let's be fair to you also and give kudos where kudos is due. It takes a lot of effort. It doesn't just happen without effort. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of years and years and years of the hard slog, right? The doing the daily work, the networking, to build yourself up to a point where you have the knowledge, you have the expertise, you have the network to actually start affecting people's lives in a positive way, right? Lots of people's lives. And this is what this is about. I think it's all about giving back and helping people get the most out of themselves and hopefully, right, bring another 100 or 1,000 or 10,000, if we can do it, companies through that scary parts of, you know, early stage to the point where they're established companies and eventually one of them will be a unicorn, the next big growth company that we can have said, hey, we helped those guys a little bit, find the right path and get to where they went. And that's what it's about. That's what makes it fun.
Absolutely. It's all about, connecting with people and building long-term relationships with long-term people. And that's how we also found you. So, you know, it's all about that. So with that, we'll call this a wrap and you have a good day, James. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. Yeah, you too. Take care. Bye now.